Have you seen the viral hottie at the Jan 6 hearings?
I didn't watch tonight's. Was there something that I missed?
Yes, I didn't watch either, but Twitter is
like
a flurry.
We're talking about the fall of the Republic and everyone's focused on some hot chick.
Hot guy, first of all. Don't be sexist and gross.
Now I'm not even remotely interested.
It's so funny though. Welcome to Subscurity, the podcast about obscure subcultures. I'm Brenna.
And I'm Jordan, and today we're talking about Nemuria. What would you say is the thing that, like, you believe that is the most outside mainstream science?
Like, just conspiracy theory or whatever?
Conspiracy theory, or something that just, like, I'm not saying you're a flat earther, although I know you are.
I was literally just, like, the first thing that came to mind was a flat earther. And side note, one time on Instagram, like, I had a flat earth account message me on the Subscurity Instagram and ask if they could be on the podcast. That is the only person who's ever actually asked to be on the podcast.
Yeah, because they need to spread the gospel.
They need to spread it. So what were you going to say before I interrupted you? Because I knew you knew I would say flat earther.
No, that's what I was asking you. I'm asking you basically, yeah, do you believe in anything? Is there anything that you believe in or question or like, do not fully agree necessarily with standard scientific consensus on something?
Not that comes to mind, but as you know, I went to a Catholic high school and one of my teachers, she like firmly and fervently believed in aliens. Fine. But did not think dinosaurs were real. Thought all the skeletons were planted
by the Jews. Yep.
Probably the space Jews. Yep. Yeah. I can't think of any. Like, maybe when you get into this topic, something will come to mind, but I'm a pretty logical, rational person.
Well, I'll be the judge of that. But I know you've encountered a UFO before.
Yes.
Self-described UFO or.
It literally was an unidentified foreign object.
You literally did not identify it.
Outside of Area 51 in Nevada.
Yeah. Okay. Have you ever had any other experiences?
Like supernatural experiences?
Yeah. Not like supernatural, a little natural. You need to, if you're going to just stare at me and blink and with annoyance, you need to audibly say that out loud as well so that our audience can just feel the frustration coming off of your face.
I am not impressed with that attempt at a joke, Jordan. I don't think so.
Beyond okay. UFO.
One time in high school, I had a dream that this kid, he was a year above me, Christian. His name was Christian, and we went to a Christian school. His name is Christian, and I didn't know him that well. We both played basketball. But I had a random dream one night that he came into school and tried to, like, stab everybody. And the very next day, I was in, like, the guidance counselor's office who had cake. And for his birthday or whatever, Christian walks in and picks up this gigantic knife, which is way oversized for the cake. And that, you know, some people might say that was a premonition of sorts.
I would not say that.
Some people would say that's a premonition of sorts.
Which people are saying that? I'm just curious.
Some people.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sorry, I'm kind of letting you down here with the intro.
No, it's okay.
I'm a pretty grounded, rational, scientific person.
It's fine. If you want to lie to people on air, it's okay. What's
your topic, Jordan?
Play up this. No, I'm not done asking questions. What about... You're someone who travels a lot.
Yes.
You've been to a lot of places that have, let's say, spiritual implications for, like, the people who live there, right? Have you ever felt, like, I'm not saying that, like, you felt divine presence or anything, but you've ever kind of, like, understood when you were visiting some, like, specific location, something, you know, Machu Picchu, for example, I know you went there, right? Like, have you ever kind of felt like, okay, I kind of get it. I get why people found this place, this building, this mountain, this river, whatever it is, like extremely significant to the point where like it became part of the mythology of the culture?
Oh, I think like all the time. I mean, I think I've said before, for me, I feel like the most spiritual or whatever you want to call it when I'm in a beautiful place, be it like hiking in a mountain, be it a foreign country, but just like taking in the natural beauty of this earth is the closest I think I ever feel to spiritual. And then the other thing that probably was the closest I came to feeling the presence or whatever you want to call it. When I lived in Miami, I had a friend.
I'm sorry. I'm imagining what story starts with. I was feeling the presence. I lived in Miami.
Well, yeah, I'll bridge this for you. I had a friend whose mom ran like a Buddhist retreat center, and they were very wealthy. So they actually hosted like actual Buddhist monks from Tibet. And they, I don't know, I think 20 of them were over at her place for like this retreat. And we went there and participated. And here, I'm really going to showcase my cultural ignorance, but they were like chanting and we chanted along. And I would say that was really kind of a cool experience because those people are so devout, right? And they actually, it's almost like Rumspringa, as I understand it, is basically these Buddhist monks who have lived however many years without any access to technology, yeah. Running water. I don't know, maybe they have running water. I don't know. But like, there's a lot of stuff they don't have access to. Some, when they come to the US or wherever on a retreat for the first time, some will actually leave Buddhism because they like are so taken by modern day technology. But anyway, to answer your question, I would say chanting with Buddhist monks from Tibet was a pretty cool experience.
That's an interesting dichotomy that you're talking about, how they, you know, the material Western world order was like a draw to the point where like it would spur them to leave.
Not everyone, like just I think
no, I'm just saying some people. But meanwhile, you participating in their ritual. I'm not saying you wanted to become a monk in Tibet, but like you felt more, however you would describe, like you felt something there. So it's like kind of funny how like bidirectional that was. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever thought about it that way.
Not really. Cause I think like that I was only there for like the hour long chant or whatever. So like, it's not like I was helping them to experience any part of like American culture per se. So it was sure. Really, it felt very one-sided. So I don't know if I would draw the same conclusion or analogy, but I see the point you're making.
I think it's funny that too, that like we talked a lot about our religious past on this. And I know for a fact that you are a lapsed Catholic? Is that a good
way to put it? I like that. I'm going to get that tattooed on like as a tramp stamp. Lapsed Catholic.
Yeah. That's where you should put it.
Yes.
But, you know, in Catholicism, there is a lot of ritual. There is a lot of, like when you go to church every Sunday, there's a lot of repetition. There's chanting. There's singing the same hymns and songs, often Latin. But I just found it interesting that like that didn't stick with you, but one experience of the Tibetan monks chanting was a lot more, I don't know, again, whatever you would describe it, but like a lot more meaningful to you in that moment.
Yeah. I mean, maybe some of it is like Orientalism and kind of glorifying an Eastern culture because it felt so different. Maybe I'm not saying that's what it was, but maybe subconsciously that was part of it. But I also think there's a difference. Like, I was basically indoctrinated Catholicism, right? My entire life raised in the church. And like, whereas that was just a spiritual experience. And I think what I appreciate about Buddhism too, is they're a lot more connected to the earth. And when, you know, you look at different religions, and I'm by no means an expert, it's probably the closest religion I would ever align myself ideologically So I think that's a part of it. Like they live what they preach too. It's very different than, you know, several of the priests who teach your high school being convicted of child molestation, right?
Why am I laughing?
Yeah.
Yeah. These monks were really out there living their values and living what they believed. And I don't know, I just thought that was a cool thing to be a part of.
Yeah, that makes sense. That said, what if I told you there is a, I don't know if religion is the right word, but there is a belief that you could take part of that is very connected to the world and the earth and also strongly correlates to your love of being outside and adventuring through the wilderness?
Go on. Does it have a name?
There is a group of people who believe that Mount Shasta in the state of California.
Shasta. I think Shasta. You're from California, shouldn't you know? But I think it's Shasta.
I'm from California is a strong way to put that.
You were born in California.
The mountain that is spelled Shasta is the center of a hidden city deep underground called Talos.
There's an underground city, like physically underground?
Of fifth dimensional light beings.
Oh, God.
And fifth dimensional light beings called Lemurians, sure, who are descendants.
I'm sure that's not it.
Who are descendants of the famous historically questionable continent of Lemuria. I mean, we say it every different way, but Lemuria.
I'm sorry, historically questionable? I've never heard of it.
Well, that's part of Pangaea. Sort of, actually, yeah. So this is like, I feel like it's been 60 something episodes since we did Law of One, and it's about time I got to do another episode on
64, to be precise.
64 episodes since I got to do an episode on kind of new age, transcendental, strange beliefs in science fictiony sounding religious stuff. So here we are.
I can't wait. I'm super excited. Round two.
This time you're sober too.
Yeah, I was super high for that one. So I'm really excited to be present, even though I've already begun forgetting some things and questions as you ask them. So hopefully, you know, that won't be the theme of the episode. But continue, Jordan. Lemur. I'm just going to think of lemur. Do you remember that show Zaboomafoo on PBS?
No. But I also wasn't born in 1990, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you are much, much older, so I guess it was past your time. But never mind. But it was about a lemur, and his name was Zaboomafoo.
Zaboomafoo?
I'm pretty sure. I'm like 90% sure, but not 100% sure.
What? So
anyway,
why did you ask? Because he's a lemur?
Yes, because you said Lemuria and made me think of lemur, and then I thought it was Zaboomafoo.
So lemurs are actually, that's why this religious group exists. In 1864, there was a zoologist named Philip Sclater, and he wrote an article about a classification of a species of lemurs. And he was puzzled because they discovered presence of these lemur fossils in Madagascar and in India, but not in Africa or the Middle East.
Okay.
And so what he was trying to do is explain how could there be lemurs in Madagascar, but not in Africa, right? Or anywhere in the Middle East. Like, how did lemurs exist on the island of Madagascar and also in India, but not in any of the land in between them, more or less in between them, right?
I was going to say, isn't Madagascar in Africa? But it's an island.
It's on the coast of Africa.
But it's an African country.
Right, but the continental African, the landmass of Africa, right?
Isn't it possible that, I don't know, you know, you have species kind of evolve at the same time in different places, or perhaps someone traveled there and like Noah's Arked it and brought a lemur with them? I don't know.
I mean,
Doesn't seem that crazy.
The first one was a decent guess, I think. What do they call it? Parallel evolution or whatever. Like, that is a thing that happens. In this case, what his hypothesis was that Madagascar and India had once been part of a larger continent. And that actually was one of the like early theories that led to our now modern day understanding of the supercontinent of Pangaea.
Oh.
So what you referenced earlier, you were on the right track. So this was kind of like the early theories that led to, oh, maybe these continents and these land masses were not always the way they were, right? And they've shifted around over time.
See, as I said earlier on in the show, I'm smart and scientifically minded. Pangaea.
Yeah, you're genius.
Evolution.
It was Noah's Ark or Pangaea. Brenna wasn't sure, but it could have gone either way.
Either or.
Right. So from that, though, that discovery and that idea of this larger continent, some people started coming up with this concept of Lemuria, a.k.a. this
India, Madagascar.
Ancient continent that spanned from India to Madagascar in the middle of kind of the Indian and Pacific Ocean. And so, and this was not initially outside the scientific norm, right? Like, it was not necessarily a testable hypothesis at the time, but it was a hypothesis of like maybe there was this once upon a time giant continent in the middle of the ocean. And a man named Ernest Haeckel actually went looking for this missing link. He proposed that the fossils of the first humans in that area actually had sunk under the sea, which to some degree is probably right, that like there had been land, right? As part of Pangaea, things broke apart. Over time, fossils did sink under the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Other people decided to follow a line of inquiry that suggested that that lost continent went somewhere else. That it didn't eventually, like, the landmass break off and, you know, world shift around. That just the landmass no longer existed in the place where it once did.
All right.
You tracking here?
I'm tracking so far, yes.
So in 1899, a man named Frederick Spencer Oliver published a book called A Dweller on Two Planets. And in this book, he kind of channeled the visions and mental dictations of a spirit, called himself Philos of Thibetan. Also, you got some random Tibetan influence here.
There you go.
And he revealed this story to Oliver over the course of 3 years. And in the story, he basically explained to Oliver that there was a continent at one point called Lemuria, and that continent had sunk, and the survivors of that continent were now living inside of Mount Shasta.
Isn't Mount Shasta a volcano?
That's a good question. I don't know, but probably, knowing all the mountains on the West Coast sitting on that tectonic plate.
Yeah, it's a fucking volcano. It's an active volcano.
Well, maybe that's because they have a giant forge inside of it and they're making things with it or something.
So how exactly would one, you know, be on an island that sinks and they don't, by proxy, drown?
Well, I'm glad you asked. So let me tell you the story of how Lemuria came to be and how they eventually had to form their city of Talos inside of Mount Shasta.
Okay.
So 4.5 million years ago, that's where we need to go back to. You remember the Earth then, I'm sure.
Yes, yeah. And you can't really question anything that started that long ago either, so.
Right. I mean, dinosaurs probably aren't real, but this is.
But so, this is for sure.
4.5 million years ago, Lemurians ruled the Earth. They had a huge continent that spanned between the western United States and Canada kind of border. So all the way almost to, yeah, the west coast of the United States, down to the southeast of, you know, Eurasia, or the southeast of Asia and northeast of Australia. So it was kind of diagonally through the Pacific to the Indian Ocean, giant continent.
Seems like a cool area.
It does. The Lemurians prospered. They were a peaceful, loving culture until 25,000 years ago. So almost, you know, they lived in peace and prosperity for like 4.25 million years.
That's pretty impressive.
I agree. Oh, more than 4.25. I can count. Closer to 4.5 million years minus 25,000. until the city of Atlantis from the Atlantic Ocean decided to go to war with them.
This is what it was reminding me of. It's reminding me of Atlantis. Okay, so this is how they both sunk. Got it. Nice.
Yes. Basically, there was this argument that occurred between Atlantis and Lemuria.
What was it over? Resources?
No, the development and evolution of other civilizations. See, these were the most advanced human beings on the planet. Coincidentally, both were white, but but they were the most advanced beings on the planet, and the Lemurians believe that lesser evolved cultures should be left alone to continue their own evolution, at their own pace, you know, trailblaze their own path forward without intervention, right? Discover thyself. The Atlanteans, on the other hand, believe that less evolved culture should be controlled by the two more evolved civilizations.
Sounds like slavery.
Or fascism, but either, it doesn't matter.
Either or.
Atlantis had a strong opinion, and Lemurians disagreed.
So this is the Confederacy, Atlantis is the South, and Lemuria is the North. Got it.
Yeah, that's exactly probably what they were going for. the argument actually resulted in several thermonuclear wars, if you can believe it.
Thermonuclear, 25,000 years ago.
Yeah, they decimated the planet 25,000 years ago.
Huh.
I wonder if that's also what led to Noah's Ark. Like, I'm sure there's a tie, right? Like, they blew up the planet, basically, changing the climate, flooding, melting ice caps, flooding the whole planet. Noah had to go on his ark. You know, I bet you could make the argument that all these are connected. I'm sure someone has.
Okay, so I'm actually not hating this theory because, you know, Fermi's paradox, just if alien life is out there, how come we haven't discovered it?
Yeah.
One of the theories is that we are truly alone because every time a human or human-like species evolves to the point like where we are now, where they're self-sufficient and you know, you have this awareness, they inevitably kill each other because like humans will just never be able to get past ourselves. So there's some science in that too, Jordan. I'm not hating this this hypothesis here. Go on, please.
I didn't know, first of all, that you were like big into Fermi's paradox. So awesome reference.
Thank you. I'm smart, as I once mentioned.
I actually like personally prefer the idea that there are lots of aliens. And they've like looked at us and like, fuck, I don't want to deal with this shit.
Yeah, those people.
Like the biggest evidence that aliens exist is that none of them want to talk to us. But there's a book I literally just finished reading last night on this exact subject. It's called Upgrade by Blake Crouch.
Okay.
It's kind of a scientific sci-fi thriller. He has a couple books like this. They're all very like near future, taking a science fiction topic and turn it into like a thriller story, okay, but to explore the science of it. And so it's about genetic, like gene editing, and the terror that would happen if human beings started being able to manipulate their own genomes, right?
Like Gattaca.
A lot like Gattaca, actually. Yeah, exactly like Gattaca. But taken to even more of an extreme. But in the background of the book is this idea that humanity is going to kill itself, and whether and there's a philosophical argument of does upgrading, you know, does editing our genome to become better humans, is that a path away from that or not, right? Like, will it make us more human in a bad way, or will it kind of move us past the human tendencies that are causing us to collapse on each other?
I feel like it would be a circle. Like, the problems you solve for then would create, in my opinion, problems you didn't anticipate. So
I think you should read the book, because I think there are characters in the book that might agree with you and characters that might not. But it's a good book.
Okay.
And it goes on that exact topic. I don't remember where I was, so I'm just going to like skip through the story here. But anyways, thermonuclear war.
Yes.
That weakened the continental plates. When the wars were over, the dust settles, as every war inevitably results. And there were no winners, only dead.
Yes.
And basically, it debased the human spirit to the side, to the point where like both sides of the conflict, Atlanteans and Lemurians, just kind of realized there was no ground to gain through this war. So this is where like the story starts to ignore the Atlanteans. Presumably they went to their sunken city under the ocean or something, right?
Obviously.
But Lemurians decided to build a separate society for themselves inside Mount Shasta.
So this is like a group of humans, or
enlightened humans, yeah.
Enlightened humans who have evolved enough that they can both live underwater, i.e. Atlanteans.
Atlanteans, yeah.
And live in volcanic magma.
Well, so I would say that the people who initially proposed this would not necessarily have known that Mount Shasta was a volcano.
Okay.
So like that today the remaining followers, because there is a group of people still believing it today, necessarily believe that it's a volcano the way modern science would tell you. Instead, they have this underground city within it, but it's also, depending on who describes it, like it's either a far future type of city that uses, you know, that's very crystalline and they use crystals to communicate and program and do all sorts of stuff with, to they are fifth dimensional beings of light who you connect to spiritually by like going to this where rivers start flowing off Mount Shasta, and you can have a transcendental connection to them, even if like through the portal of reality that
is Mount the Shasta hole represents. In the top of Mount Shasta.
Exactly. Quite literally, yes. And this is like the capstone to this like spiritual city that exists through the reality of Mount Shasta.
Honestly, like this really sounds like this could be a really fun movie plot.
Oh, that's not, you mean like the kind
Atlantis
of the whole
versus
war aspect?
Yeah. Maria, and then, you know, developing their underground cities, or like I could just see it being a spinoff of like Lemuria, the other Atlantis
yeah.
No one talks about.
It's kind of like Godzilla versus Kong type of thing, like you have the first movie is about Atlantis, the second movie is about Lemuria, and the third movie is they have to fight each other.
Yes, exactly.
And then inevitably there's like a third civilization of like evil beings that they have to team up against, so that they know, they realize they don't actually have to fight each other. They have to fight this other.
No, we're going to keep it a trilogy. Anytime they go beyond a trilogy, it's just not good, Jordan. Also, this is a really good idea. So if anyone actually executes upon this, like I would like
we
producer
claim
rights.
IP rights. Yeah. We, this is our IP now. despite all of the literature that I had to draw from to come up with this podcast topic. So that was all like from 1899, from Frederick Spencer Oliver's book that kind of explained the story of Talos. In 1931, a man named Harvey Spencer Lewis, who was using a pseudonym, but he himself wrote another book about the hidden Lemurians inside of Mount Shasta. And this book is now like widely believed to be the reason the movement became popular.
Okay.
And the movement being all the people who started to believe in this. And it's kind of the genesis of all of the legends that spun off from it. A big group followed the legend and started to believe in it until the 1960s.
That recently.
Yeah. Well, I'm not saying everyone believed it. I'm saying there was a larger group of people.
But still.
But overall, there is a lot of literature that talks about Lemuria. They do not all synchronize, I would say.
Okay.
Like, again, like kind of how I described, there's different versions of the city and different versions of the being, right? They all come from the same common roots in that there was a continent that existed. There was some sort of cataclysm or some event that caused that entire continent to go underwater, and that Lemuria itself was this civilization of advanced beings of some sort, whether they became fifth dimensional light beings or just really enlightened humans, and they, rather than disappear under the water with the rest of their continent, they went into the mountain with their and created their city of Talos. So those are kind of the key concepts, but from there, different stories divulge in different ways.
Okay. I know it's always hard to get like an exact number on these things, but in your research, did you come upon a subreddit? Like, did you have any kind of indication of like how many people believe in this?
It's not large now. Until the late 1930s, there was over like a million plus people who did believe in it or believed in variations of it. For example, there was this guy. Over a million people.
That's
yeah.
insane.
It was a huge thing. So in 1930s, there was a man named Guy Ballard who claimed that he met Saint Germain, who was I don't know if you know Saint Germain, but he was a European adventurer and philosopher who died in like the late 1700s.
So not a real saint?
I don't know if he was canonized or not. Okay. Or if that's just a nickname, but he must have been, because it literally is Saint Germain. But this guy was an adventurer, he was a philosopher, whatever. Well known in like European high society in the late 18th century. But in the 1930s, Guy Ballard claims to have met him on the mountain. And this led to the formation of the I Am movement, which is like a whole like separate one of these topics that we could go into for three episodes.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
It's like the cliff notes of it is that Ballard and his wife, Edna, started this religious movement called I Am Activity. It was a mix of Christianity, theosophy, fierce nationalism. Ballard himself claimed to be George Washington reincarnated. It said America was spiritually superior among nations, you know, basically the Republican Party of 2022.
Amazing. And it's reminding me of Mormonism and Joseph Smith, like this.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
the story that one man was selected and chosen by some higher, an angel, not even God, but like an angel, to hear the gospel and pass it down.
Yeah. And the theological ties to American exceptionalism, right? Like it's super interesting that those kind of go hand in hand. And weirdly, like, again, not to make this an episode about Donald Trump, but like the messianic devotion so many of his followers seem to have,
right,
towards it, like it finds itself. I feel like there's this pattern, especially among people who are religiously prone and very nationalistic, to look for those figures to cross between those two worlds of something Christian-ish as well as something very American-ish. Anyways, that group had over a million followers. So they were not necessarily Lemurian specifically, but it was like a spin from Lemuria.
Gotcha.
And there were a bunch of other kind of these similar groups that came up from that. That group itself, the I Am movement, ended up being charged by the U.S. government of swindling their followers out of millions of dollars.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Yeah, so that group kind of fell apart. But there were countless stories from witnesses in the early 20th century who had run-ins with the Lemurians. And that helped to convince, I think, other people that this was more of a real thing. So for
more
example,
people
1904-
attesting to it.
What's that?
More people attesting to it, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So in 1904, there was this British prospector named J.C. Brown. He claimed he found an underground city 11 miles deep in the mountain. And in this city, there was...
The volcano.
Yes. Well, no, it was just a mountain. I don't know why you keep saying it's a volcano. You have no evidence.
That's what Google says, so I'm going to go with it.
And has Google been inside of Mount Shasta? No.
I don't know. Mount Shasta doesn't have to share her history with who's been inside her. That is her business. You like that one?
That was pretty good.
Thanks.
I did like that one. But inside, he claimed that the city was full of gold, that had shields, that had mummies that were 10 feet tall. So again, like a different version of Lemuria than any other one previously. This wasn't crystalline. This was full of riches, right? But still a version of it. That actually led to 80 people create an expedition team to go explore the mountain for the underground city.
That's cool.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the day the team was supposed to set out for the mountain, J.C. Brown just disappeared. No one could find him.
Oh my God. So did the rest of the group go, or did they?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think they must have aborted. Today there is a group called Shasta Vortex Adventures. There's this whole separate thing where like the mountain is a vortex. I'm not even going to get into that, but this adventure group, if you're really interested in it, will like also give you the Lemurian. Like they don't consider them separate things, right?
Oh, okay.
Even if they're contradictory, they can exist in parallel. The Shasta Vortex and the Lemurians. I'm not going to get into the vortex, but
it's like the, what is it? The trilogy, the tri father, son, and the Holy Ghost. It is a,
the Holy Trinity.
The Trinity, that's the word, yeah. Not trilogy.
The trilogy, the Holy Trilogy. The Holy first trilogy. Was the Father, then was the Son, then was the Holy Ghost.
The Holy Spirit,
yeah.
Amen.
Yeah, it is kind of like that. You know, one true God, only God's kind of multiple things, but also the same thing.
Yes.
God sent his only son, but it's also him. So did he really send? Yeah.
Yeah.
What kind
yeah.
of sacrifice are you making, God?
And then there's the Holy Spirit, whom at middle school dances, we had to leave room for. In between us while
it is
dancing.
It is nice to know there is like a measurable amount of width that the Holy Spirit
leave room for the Holy Ghost. Okay. And then at my high school, also Catholic, grinding was banned. Not enough room for the Holy Ghost in there.
You had pants on, presumably.
Yeah, obviously no dresses and girls.
Oh, right. Yeah, you wear skirts, dresses, whatever. Yeah.
No, we're talking about like a dance. So like people dressed at like a homecoming dance or something. So, you know, whatever tacky dresses teenagers wear.
I guess I never really thought about that. Like I went to public school. I never really thought private school kids also got to dress up, because in my head, private school kids always wear the same uniforms every single day.
Not to our dances, man.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, no, that's when we got to hoe it up and dress in like cool people clothing.
Hoe it up.
Hoe it up. My hoeing clothes.
Anyways, so the founder of Shasta Vortex Adventure, her name is Ashlyn. She has no last name. She's just Ashlyn. This is not a joke. She quite literally does not have a surname.
I bet Ashlyn. She was born like, I bet her birth name is like Genevieve.
DiMaggio
the third, and she's like this very, very affluent woman who grew up with
and her name's Ashley, not Ashlyn.
No, Genevieve. It's like very pretentious, yeah. And she's like, she wanted to be all earthy and just change it to Ashlyn.
Exactly. I think that's kind of the impression I get of her. No offense, Ashlyn, if you're listening. She says that there's these couple stories from the 1940s where Lemurians were actually seen walking into town. So they left their city, took corporeal form if they weren't already, I don't know, and decided to come on down to town. They were described as being 7 feet tall. They wore long white robes and sandals. They went to the general store to buy supplies.
What? Well, that's the best part. Okay. What kind of supplies? How do they know what a general store is? Do they use the same tools in Lemuria or wherever the fuck?
That's a good question. I'm assuming it was like tobacco or something, maybe. Mm. I don't know. They paid for their purchases, whatever those purchases were, with chunks of gold.
That was accepted too. Accepted currency at the time.
The best part is, she says, the shopkeeper would take the gold, turn around and try to give them change, which, pause there, because like I'm sure the shopkeeper was like, oh yeah, that's about $17, so let me figure out what your change is.
I would have
like,
literally zero clue also how much gold equates to what dollar amount,
right?
Zero idea.
And also, like, what are they gonna do with your paper money? Like,
we'll use it at the
gold.
Next shop. We'll use it at the next shop, Jordan.
I guess so. Anyways, they would turn around and try to give them change, and the Lemurian would be gone. I know. Mysterious. So there's all these witness accounts. Today, like I said, there are still people who believe in it as a modern day belief. Largely, these people feel that Lemuria can be contacted, felt, whatever else, through spiritual practices. There's a lot of you know, new age, kind of the same kind of stuff we talked about in Law of One, this kind of like getting in touch with the earth and yourself and everything else and the greater universe. I did find a YouTube video from a woman who is part of the group of Telos Lemuria Israel. So she's an Israeli woman and part of a group from Israel who traveled on a journey to Mount Shasta during COVID to during go COVID? Have the oh. yeah to this pilgrimage took place during COVID because it happened like December of 2020 happened to be the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn moving into Aquarius. I don't know what that means, but apparently it was a big deal.
That's it's actually very significant. That is an astrological event not meant to be taken lightly.
And I would love for you to tell me more, because the most I know about it is the song Age of Aquarius.
That's what song is that? I've never heard this. Who sings it?
Steve Carell at the end of 40 Old Virgin.
I'm not even remember. Oh, huh. That's a deep cut.
It's also a very well-known song.
By whom?
You apparently don't know.
By whom?
Well, you're asking me a lot of questions.
My references have been on point this episode. I feel like, sorry, I don't know your fucking Aquarius song made up bullshit.
Well, since you do know so much, tell me about the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn moving into Aquarius, because I don't know anything about it.
Oh, I don't know anything about it either.
Yeah, I know. That was just... okay. Shut up, Brenna.
Damn it.
So anyways, I kind of watched this video and I just tried to transcribe a lot of what she was saying as best as I could. I'm going to relay that to you now. It was all over the place, if I'm being honest. There was definitely some of it that I wasn't necessarily understanding because I don't think she's like a native English speaker. So some of that, I think some of it is literally just lost in translation, but also some of it is, I don't even know what to say. So I'm just going to tell you what all she had to say.
Lay it on me.
So she says that she went because they wanted to try to open the portal. The portal is in the fifth dimension and there's this really huge city that's not only in the mountain, but also all around it. So this was kind of a new thing for me because I was under the impression that like the mountain was like the fortress walls of Lemuria basically.
Right.
And now I'm told it extends even beyond the mountain itself. And I don't understand if that's underground as well or like an interdimensional space.
Well, it's the fifth dimension, Jordan, so.
And I don't know what that means either.
What is a fifth dimension?
I don't know. It's over four and four is time. So you've got X, Y, Z in time. And I don't know what goes beyond that. But, you know, I'm not a physicist and these people are. So I would ask them. She did explain why the redwood trees of California are so huge. It's because they are the memories of the time of Lemuria.
Oh, okay. Yes, indeed. They host many memories then.
Yeah. So again, I'm not totally understanding if like the trees are...
their memories, Jordan.
Is it a metaphor or is it they're physically a memory?
Literally memories.
Got it. Well, that's what... Yeah, I mean, she would agree. she explained the history of Lemuria. This one's a little different than the way I had read it in some of the literature, so I thought I would give her take on it. 5 million years ago, that does track, the people of Lemuria lived in tranquility for thousands of years, which, you know...
Millions, actually.
But she said thousands. They were in peace and harmony and love. There was a picture over the video that showed unicorns in it as well, which was nice.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. What I did find interesting was, again, all the people were white. As was she. But, you know, it's important. There was actually, in her story, there was peace between Atlantis of the Atlantic Ocean and Lemuria of the Pacific Ocean.
Hmm.
But for some reason, eventually, the Lemuria decided to move on and sank. Some of the people from Lemuria went back to the mother star, known as Mu.
Mother star?
Yes.
Mu, like a cow?
Like M-U, Mu.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mu.
Mu. however, there was another group that decided to stay here, and keep the knowledge of Lemuria, which I guess is in the redwood trees now, but keep the knowledge of Lemuria for the new souls that will come. And those beings went on to build Talos under Mount Shasta.
Do you know every time you say being, it sounds like you're saying beans? These beans.
Beans. Do I say that word weird, or is that weird? Is that weird? Is that word weird?
No, you're saying it weird. I would say beings. I'd say being.
Bean.
And you're going, bean.
Bean.
Bean, bean. That's all. Continue.
She also goes on to say that there are a lot of other cities inside the planet. I think this is an important distinction. This ties into something called, apparently, the Agartha Light Grid. I had never heard of this. This is something I'm probably going to want to talk about at some point, because it is quite literally the Hollow Earth theory.
Amazing.
Yeah, which I find way more compelling than Flat Earth. Like,
yes.
It's way more interesting to imagine, like, ancient civilizations buried underneath us. That
would be cool, actually.
That would be cool, right?
Like, what if they come up and they have to fight us? Like, they come up from underground and it's it's like the upside down, Stranger Things. God, fucking crushing the references today.
Look at you participating in pop culture.
Look at me go.
Mount Shasta is, according to her, the crown chakra portal that gets energy from the galaxy.
Okay.
This is not the only one on Earth, however. She includes a bunch of ones, including the pyramids of Giza, Machu Picchu. Part of the reason I asked you about Machu Picchu. I don't know if you saw anything when you were there, but...
Mm-hmm. I saw a llama.
Did you get any energy from the galaxy, or just saw a llama?
No, alpaca, I meant. I think a llama. Llama.
This is alpaca erasure, is what this is.
And yes, I did get a good vibe from him.
Cool. Jerusalem was also listed. I found that interesting as an Israeli, that everywhere else has like these ancient like monuments or a mountain, and they just this was just the city of Jerusalem.
It's just Israel.
Yeah. Lemuria itself, like the ancient continent, that's actually represents Eden. Like that was heaven on earth. She then went on to say something that I was struck by, because she was talking about how all of these people these famous people throughout history, Jesus, David, etc., were all connected to this as well, because they're part of the Great White Brotherhood.
Oh my God.
Now, that was my reaction. Oh my God. I Googled so is this like
the KKK pre-KKK.
I thought that too. I Googled this term and it like, I think they're using white in the way that I hate people to use it. Like
good.
Like good. Mm. Not necessarily. But like, yeah, apparently it's this is not like, she didn't invent this. This is like a term that is used to describe a lot of this movement of like all these great people throughout history that have like are like tied together through this brotherhood of some sort. But it's interesting to me that we use white and brothers, like it's men, white men.
Great white that, brotherhood. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways, so she talked about how these people are connected to that. And then she went like kind of ended this video of making a very strong point that even as important as Lemuria is to her and her beliefs, Israel is also super important. And she just quickly, with very little pausing, pointed out that Jews came to the planet from our Jewish star. And our job as Jews is to hold the light.
Is this why you're causing forest fires in California?
Maybe.
Is there any parallels?
As she was saying, hold the light, literally the image on screen flashes to lighting Hanukkah candles. So
like it was amazing. Like a production.
Like, yeah, like quite literally the metaphor was spelled out very perfectly. Jews hold the light, and that's why we have candle ceremonies.
Amazing. And you also run the cabal. So
well, that's a separate thing. And we have our space lasers. Yeah.
Space lasers, everything.
But yeah, so a Jew's job is to hold the light for our fifth dimensional friends in Lemuria. So this is how she tied her personal nationalism, religious, ethnicity, whatever you might want to say, like her identity to this greater belief in Lemuria and the power of this lost continent and people.
Well, that is amazing. And where do I sign up to convert to this belief system? And where do we worship? And how frequently?
You know, these are great questions. I think the first thing you should do is take a pilgrimage yourself.
Mm. To Mount Shasta?
Yep, Mount Shasta.
I jump in?
I think, yeah. So I'm pretty sure you have to, like, go there, paint your body in mud. I'm making this up as I go, but eat some herbs that you gather yourself.
Mushrooms.
From mushrooms. Yeah, actually.
Yes, mushrooms.
You know what? Tell you what. Can we go? You can be clothed, but can we go? And I just want to watch you eat mushrooms.
Random mushrooms. From,
right.
Let's do it. That actually sounds really fun.
At the base of Mount
Shasta. Yeah, that sounds really fun, actually. I would actually do that. I know you're joking, but I have a new trip idea.
And that's Lemurians. If you'd like to tell me how to pronounce something, despite me knowing how it is pronounced and immediately believe you, feel free to give me the list of things I should say differently next time. You can reach us on Instagram at Subsecurity Podcast. Our website is subsecurity.com. And you can email us directly at subsecurity@gmail.com. Our intro and outro music is the instrumental of We're Better Together by Gil Mordecai. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.